The most infamous
radio podcast.
Tate Jordan.
Don't be scared to sip that juice, baby.
You are now listening to the Black Juice Podcast on GlassHouseRadio.com, part of the Howard University Radio Network. I'm your host, the one and only Tate Jordan. Make sure you follow The Juice on Twitter and IG at @TheBlack_Juice. Don't be scared to sip the juice. This is the first episode of the Black Juice Podcast. What is the Black Juice Podcast? I'm happy you asked. TheBlackJuice.com is actually a brand new cultural blog that was launched in November. It is slowly becoming the most important and necessary blog to the culture. Make sure you check it out at TheBlackJuice.com. In terms of the podcast is a stream of consciousness. It is a juice that is not a want or a desire, but it is a necessity. It is a place that you can come, have your mental challenged, and definitely hear some good debates and good conversations in terms of things that's happening in our community, in our neighborhoods, and also the world. Also, we got a little lighthearted stuff as well. We're talking about sports, music, and things going on in the culture as it pertains to Black people. So on today's show, we got a good show coming up. We will be discussing race and entertainment, specifically the Cam Newton criticism, and also the apparent lack of color at this year's Oscars Awards. Later, during our sports segment, we will be analyzing the dominance of the Golden State Warriors and take a look at Kobe's career in review. As 20 years almost wrapped up in the books, definitely have some talking points to talk about there. Later, make sure you stay tuned for our review about Beyonce's Super Bowl performance and also Kendrick Lamar's Grammy performance. You are now listening to the Black Juice Podcast on GlassHouseRadio.com, part of the Howard University's radio network. I'm your host, the one and only Tay Jordan. Make sure you follow the Black Juice on Twitter and IG at @TheBlack_Juice. Don't be scared to sip the juice. All right, heading into our first segment. Again, I'm your girl, Tay Jordan. Right now I have filling in is Austin. He is our engineer and producer. Definitely know his stuff. Austin, say what's up.
What's up, everybody? How's everybody doing?
Austin, I'm happy to have you, man. I know you know your stuff. Okay, so getting right into it, let's talk about race.
Okay.
So a few weeks ago, obviously, Super Bowl 50 went down. The Carolina Panthers were the heavy favorites going into the game. Unfortunately, they was not ready for that defense with from Von Miller and the Denver Broncos. So we've seen Peyton Manning go off with the W, so it's all good. You know, Cam's just 26. He'll probably be back, hopefully. I know the haters don't want to see him back. But knowing Cam, he'll be back. But talking about Super Bowl 50, okay, we know the Broncos won, but let's talk about the storylines outside of the game. Going into the game, you know, Cam Newton has harshly been criticized all season about his, he liked the dab. Everybody know Cam for the dab. I think people know the dab more so for Cam Newton than actually the Migos. The criticism for, you know, his on-field behavior, is it just people disliking it and criticizing it because they feel like it's unsportsmanlike behavior from a quarterback, or are they really sticking it to him because he is a Black quarterback? What's your take on that? Does it have anything to do with race?
I think it has a lot to do with race, actually. I think when you see African Americans excel in their various fields, we're supposed to take our success in stride. You know, they don't want us to quote unquote showboat or you know, celebrate how we see fit. You know, it's actually similar to when Serena was back on her run, and everybody knows how exuberant Serena is, how she shows her victory, you know, how she expresses herself. And people were criticizing her about that. So I feel like when Blacks succeed, they want us to, okay, you did your thing, now just sit down and take it, you know, but we can't show out how we want to show out. And I don't think that's fair at all.
I agree. You definitely brought up a good point about, you know, it's like, for instance, like, you know, when a basketball player is, you know, speaks on something political or hands up, don't shoot, it's like, oh, dude, just play basketball. That's what we pay you for. So do you think, like, Cam Newton unapologetically being who he is and expressing himself on the field, do you think that because of the harsh criticism he is receiving, that he should chill and assimilate and just, you know, do what they want him to do, or should he keep being himself?
I definitely think he should keep being himself, because once he stops being himself, it's no point in him playing the game.
Right.
You know, he plays the game for the way that he was raised, how he loves to play the game. And once you stop being yourself, you know, you take away your love and your passion for the game. That's how he expresses himself. You know, that's his heart. So telling him to not do this or do this is taking his heart out of the game.
I agree. I agree. So, you know, during the season, they had a game. The Carolina Panthers had a game against the Tennessee Titans. And, of course, you know, they went 15-1. So that was one of the games they won. And afterwards, something went viral from a fan that was in attendance at the game with one of her children. She wrote a letter that went viral. And the letter, she basically attacked Cam Newton for his, and I quote, classless behavior and lack of professionalism. And it kind of was just like, wow, like, how do you figure? And it was nothing more from his dancing. Like, she felt like it was very classless and distasteful for him to be doing that. And for that to go viral, and for some of the things that I see on social media just grilling this man, it's like, it really sparks the conversation to have about race and entertainment. Also, him losing the Super Bowl, obviously, you know, it was a big talk about him, you know, abruptly leaving the post-game podium. We definitely got to talk about that. Was that blown out of proportion, or was it like just Cam playing into their hands? It's like, okay, now we definitely go expose this and like grill them.
I think it was definitely blown out of proportion a little bit. I think it's the same thing essentially as his celebrations. When he celebrates, it's going to be scrutinized. I mean, he's a competitor, you know what I'm saying? Nobody's going to take a loss well,
right,
especially right. when you come and you're expected to win. You know, of course, that's how he's going to react. So I understand how he feels. You know, being an athlete, being a competitor, I definitely understand how he feels.
Right.
So honestly, I don't blame him at all. You know, maybe some people, it might have, you know, it wasn't professional, which can be understood, but I still think it was. Right, he's human. Exactly. You can't expect somebody of his level of, you know, tenacity and fierceness to just take a loss and be okay with it, you know.
After, right,
right,
so that,
right.
My take on it is, you know, I'm definitely not excusing him for what he did. I do think he could have handled it better, but you know, then again, I've never been in his shoes. I never have lost a Super Bowl in 15 minutes, had 1,000 mics stuck in my face, so I definitely understand. To his credit, I will say, you know, and he said it too, you know, he is a sore loser. Who takes losing on the biggest stage for all to see? Who takes that lightly?
Right.
But what I will say, the criticism that he received afterwards from some former players is what really stood out to me. One being in particular, Primetime, Deion Sanders. I'm not sure if you know, but afterwards, you know, him and Marshall Faulk and Michael Irving was having a conversation on the broadcast, and Deion really took this really interesting perspective. He was comparing Cam to his white counterparts, such as Peyton Manning, such as Tom Brady, and was saying that, you know, oh, Cam needs to handle himself better. These players would never do that. Which brings me to my question. Why do we as black people, and it's not just football, why do we always feel the need to compare ourselves to our white counterparts as if they are the norm? And see, this is the standard. You need to act like this.
Right.
This is the only okay standard.
Right.
So talk a little bit about that. What's your take on that?
Honestly, I don't think you can really make that comparison. Mm-hmm. We look at Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, who have been, you know, elite quarterbacks, you know, give them their credit. But Cam Newton is Cam Newton.
Right.
You know, he brings his own work ethic, his own passion, his own hustle, his own ambition. You know, that's what makes him Cam Newton. And so just because you may not agree with how he responded to the loss, I don't think you can compare his professionalism and his skill set to that of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. You know, Tom Brady is Tom Brady. Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning. You know, they're all great quarterbacks. They all bring their own, you know, different accolades to the game.
Right.
But Cam Newton is his own. He's his own little circle. You know,
he should be allowed to do that,
right,
without permission or without the criticism that he's getting. That's why I applaud Cam so much, because he is unapologetically himself, no matter what level he is, no matter what position he is. Yes, quarterbacks are not known to dance, but Cam is Cam. He's going to win on his own accord. He's going to lose on his own accord. And he's a grown man. Let him do that. And I think that, you know, him doing that on such high platform speaks volumes to, you know, little kids and, you know, people looking to him as a leader, because it just goes to show you that you can be yourself no matter what level you are.
I think just one more thing to add to that. Even if you don't necessarily agree with what he does and how he expresses himself, you have to respect it.
I agree.
You know, you have to respect it. Like, he plays the game well. He went 15-1.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Like, how can you question that. So if right. saying, you know, for those that's criticizing, saying that, you know, I hear a lot of times, oh, he just rubs me the wrong way.
Right.
Like, know when it's football reasons and know mm-hmm. when it's like race reasons.
Right.
Like,
right.
I think a lot of times people, you know, when they leave that open-ended statement, like, it's just something about him.
Well, right.
Like, what it is.
Right.
A black man that's a millionaire that's like winning and mm-hmm. he makes people uncomfortable. And that right. just is what it is.
Cam said it himself in an interview. He said, they're afraid of me because they've never seen anything like me to compare me to. You know, and he knows that.
Said, like, people fear what they don't understand.
Exactly. They don't understand. Exactly. They can't conquer them, you know.
Right.
So.
All right. So, yeah, definitely, you know, that's some interesting stuff about Cam. But moving along, so staying on the race topic, getting into the Oscars. So the Oscars definitely caught a big criticism this year. For another year, there is a lack of color in the nomination, so which generated the hashtag Oscar so white. So another year, you know, we're not, it's like, it's not like we're not used to this, you know, as far as black people not being recognized for their work. Because black people were not recognized this year, a few big stars such as Jada Pinkett and Spike Lee took to the net and social media and, you know, just expressed their dissatisfaction with the lack of nominations for black people. So I wanted to get your take on that. Like, do we need to stop chasing these nominations and stop chasing white validation and just embrace our own, such as the BET Awards, such as the Image Awards? Were you surprised by the lack of nominations? Or not only were you surprised, but do you feel like, what is the resolution? Do you feel like, oh yeah, it needs to get better? Or do you feel like we need to like stop chasing and asking them for validity and to recognize us, and we just need to embrace our own?
I think we need to embrace our own, because when you constantly...
I guarantee you Stacey Dash don't agree with you.
That's fine. That's fine. She has her own opinion. But I think to continue to seek validation is to... You're still giving them that victory, mm-hmm. you know, because if why? Because if you don't need that victory, if you're embracing your own, you need no one's validity.
Exactly.
You know, so I think constantly seeking, you know, white, you know, validity is like pretty much just playing into their hands, you know. So I think it's important to embrace your own. You know, if you know your work is good, if you know you've touched someone, or you know you've made, you know, accomplished your mission or made your statement, then you don't need anyone's approval.
I definitely agree with that. I think that that's something that we all need to have some uniformity on and agree to. You had, you know, obviously Jada had came out and said some stuff, I guess, in defense to her husband and Will's performance in this year's movie, Concussion. Then, you know, one of his co-stars from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air had said some harsh criticism in response to Jada's criticism. And she basically was saying, ain't nobody boycotting anything. Basically, she said that, you know, Jada and Will basically need to fall back. And my thing is, my mom always told me, if you ain't got nothing nice to say, don't say nothing at all. Like, if you wasn't down with the boycott, why say anything? Like, what's your take on Vivian's, like, criticism and response to that? I think she need to shut up. Like, just fall back. Like, you're not even relevant.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure what she's really trying to, you know, accomplish by, you know, what she was saying. Maybe she was just, I don't know, in the heat of the moment. You know, so I don't know. That's not really something I feel is relevant.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Just a little a lash out, pretty much.
Basically,
you know,
I definitely agree with that. Well, you know, I can talk. Knowing me, I could talk about race forever and ever. But we definitely got a lot more things to talk about. We are heading into our sports segment right after the break. But first thing first, we have to give the verse of the week. Verse of the week is when we play a selected verse from an artist and break down whether it's heat or whether it's ice. If it's heat, that means it's hot and it's nice. If it's ice, it means it's brick and it's cold and we ain't trying to hear it. So this verse of the week is from Drake. Now this verse appeared on Meek Mill's track. You know, Drake always blessing Meek Millie with a single. It's from Rico. And in this verse, and I quote, Drake says, what did Drake say on this verse? All right, he said, and I quote, I go make $50 million and give some millions to my people. They go Tony Montana and then cop them some Shaq at the free throws. Now, I thought that line was clever. Like, you know, obviously it's a, you know, it's a drug reference, but it's also a metaphor to Shaquille O'Neal. Like, he shot bricks, like, mm-hmm. at the free throw. So right. I thought that was pretty clever. What did you think about that line? Was it the dub?
I definitely think it's clever. Drake definitely has been known to spit some bars
right.
in his career.
Now, he might... got a ghostwriter. We don't know if he's right.
Maybe. But at the end of the day, Drake is still Drake. I still rock with him.
Right.
The line is, regardless of who wrote it, the line is still hot.
I definitely agree. Drake is definitely underrated on the lyrical tip, for
absolutely.
Sure. All right, so cool. You are now listening to the Black Juice Podcast on GlassHouseRadio.com, part of the Howard University's radio network. I'm your host, the one and only Tay Jordan. Make sure you follow The Juice on Twitter and IG at @black_juice. Don't be scared to sip the juice. All right, guys. On our last segment, we talked about race and entertainment, mainly how race plays a role in the Cam Newton hate. We also talked about the lack of color at this year's Oscar Awards. This segment, we will be discussing the Warriors and their quest for history. We will also be analyzing Kobe Bryant's career and his place in history. First thing first, let's get to the Golden State Warriors and their domination. All right, so you know I'm from Cleveland, so I'm a huge Cavaliers fan, LeBron all day long. So this whole Steph Curry, the best player in the league, I'm really not feeling it. You know, I feel like he had 3 or 4 mediocre years in the league when he first, and then, you know, he just got hot the last 2 years, and now everybody's on the bandwagon. But, you know, they off to a good start. I think right now they what, like, some crazy 50-5 or something crazy. So the talk of the town in the sports world and the basketball world is basically like they're chasing history. Are they gonna get that Bulls? Are they gonna beat the Bulls record, that 72-10 record? So my question is the same. I say no. I think they're not gonna beat the record. I hope they don't beat the record. I can't stand the Warriors. I don't wanna sound like a hater, but I just feel like Steph Curry is a system player. He's very overrated. But that's a whole other, you know, segment of it. But to answer the question, I say they're not going to beat the record. What you say?
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I definitely think they're going to beat the record. Mm. The pace that they're playing at, the level they play at, the team chemistry, just the way they execute, the way they pass, shoot, dribble, rebound, everything, from the way they just walk out the locker room. They are in sync.
Okay, that's fair. I will say they are playing some great basketball. They play well as a team. You know, they remind me of those old school Phoenix Suns teams. Mm-hmm. When, you know, Amari was healthy and they had Steve Nash and Joe Johnson, stuff like that. But as far as breaking the record, that means they got to go some crazy like 30-4 the rest of the way. 25-4. I think it was something
right.
like that.
Right.
I don't see it happening. Like, it's crunch time. It's everybody in the West is going to try to, you know, play for seeding, and it's going to get much tougher. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that they're going to have that cakewalk like they did the first half of the season. So I don't see them losing less than 5 games. Like, that's just, if they do that, then they have my respect for sure. We'll see. I'm willing to take back all the stuff I said. But I know that's not going to happen.
Well, I don't – honestly, you have – in the West, you have the Spurs, who are a great defensive team. Mm-hmm. The Clippers are a solid team.
Yeah, just got a good trade.
Yep. And Portland is decent.
Yo, Dame Lillard just dropped 51.
Dame Lillard's a man. He's one of my favorite point guards. I respect his game. I respect his game a lot. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I don't see anybody that can stop the Warriors. I don't see anybody can stop them. Well, definitely, they're all together. I mean, the East is not even a competition. I love LeBron, but the Cavs as a whole, they can't outscore, you know, and stop the Warriors.
Definitely. So, which brings me to my next question. Okay, so we talked about, like, if they go chase that, if they go beat that history. But my question is more of a personal, individual one for Steph Curry. You know, a lot of people talked about, you know, LeBron James ran in the NBA, was the face of the league for years. Then, you know, people start saying KD. Then, you know, Derrick Rose has had his little stint of being the face before he got hurt. Then it was like, oh, Anthony Davis is the future. Then Steph just came out of nowhere. And people are saying Steph Curry is the best player in the world. Now, ESPN just had a ranking, and where they already put him as 4th best point guard of all time, which is crazy to me because I thought ESPN was a credible source. Then they just been tripping lately. So, which brings me, is Steph Curry the best player in the world right now?
I think he is because he's on the best team in the world right now.
Okay.
You know, I think a lot of his success comes from his team chemistry, his team bonding. But as much as I respect Steph Curry, I don't think he would be this successful if this was the NBA from 7-8 years ago. You know, because if we look at the NBA in the past, it was more of a defensive league.
Yeah.
You know, but now right now the NBA is, we have the generation of point guards, mm-hmm. and offense and 3-point shooting and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So if we would have put Steph Curry in a league back when you had, let's use Detroit, because everybody loved Detroit, Ben Wallace and Rip Hamilton and those guys who would get on your face.
Right.
Steph Curry wouldn't drop 50 points on them guys, because they weren't going to have it.
Exactly.
You know,
I definitely agree. I think that Steph Curry definitely is a generation and system player. I think if you inserted him in early 2000s, back when, you know, the guys was, as far as at his position, that was running it, the Steve Francis, the Steph Marbury's, Jason Kidd's, he would not be on an elite level
right.
of point guards. Like,
right.
I feel like Steph is weak defensively. He lacks athletic ability, if you ask me. He's just I think Steph is a hell of a shooter. Probably the best shooter today, but best player, stop pushing it. Not the best player. But you do make a good point. He does play on the best team. I feel like if you take Draymond Green off that team, though, I feel like Steph is not even the most valuable player on his team. I think that is, without a doubt, Draymond Green. He would probably never get the credit. But that man is that glue.
I agree. Steph is definitely the face,
right.
but Draymond Green is definitely the backbone.
Right.
Because Draymond Green can play the 1 to 5.
Exactly.
He can bring the ball up the court, and he'll guard the biggest man on the floor and still put up 25 points a game.
Yeah, he's a defensive nightmare. I mean, he a killer on a pick and roll.
Absolutely. Draymond is that dude that you want on your team.
Exactly.
He is that dude you want on your team.
I definitely agree. So they were smart. You know, whatever you want, Dre. 85 mil? Cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Definitely good stuff. But yeah, best player in the league? I say no.
Really?
I, you know, I'm riding with the hometown kid, Mr. LeBron James, rolling with the winners. I think this year, you know, I'm hoping for a repeat. And I'm, you know, hopefully everybody is healthy. If everybody is healthy, we taking them down.
I respect the Cavs, honestly. I'm a Kyrie fan.
Okay.
I like when they. I know the big debate was who's the better ball handler between Steph and Kyrie,
mm-hmm.
and honestly, I honestly can't pick. I respect them both because Kyrie can put some moves on you.
Man, Kyrie has some of the most, like, his footwork too. Like,
absolutely,
it's just ridiculous.
Absolutely,
he's so quick.
Right.
Like, it's
right.
Like you don't have a chance to recover.
Right.
I would hate to guard him.
I would hate to guard him too.
I would hate to guard him.
But since you mentioned that you don't like Steph Curry's defense, Kyrie is not much of a defender either.
You know what? I'm the first one to tell you, I'm always criticizing him. You know, he's one of my favorite players, but I definitely got a lot of criticism for him. Like, defensively, he needs to get better.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to learn how to play with talent. Because when he first came to the league, you know, Cavs really weren't playing for nothing, so he could do what he wanted to do.
Right.
But he brought some of those bad habits into playing with great players like LeBron and Kyrie. LeBron and Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for you to pound the ball in that isolation basketball on the wing for 20 seconds. Like, dude, you got a team.
Right.
Like,
right.
Pass
right.
the rock.
Right.
But yeah, he definitely needs to get better defensively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the reasons why I, as far as point guards, I give the nod to like a Chris Paul or a Russell Westbrook, because I feel like they're a little bit more well rounded.
Right. You know, there was a time when Chris Paul was actually my favorite point guard in the league.
Oh, really?
And then, being that I'm from Chicago, Derrick Rose came into the league,
and once
Derrick came into the league, it was over. I was like, "This is my man. We going with it."
Yeah,
and
I was rocking with him since Memphis too.
Oh yeah,
Chalmers killed me with that, you know, that last second free throws and winning the game. But Derrick, I just talked about this on Twitter last week. It was the game against the Cavaliers, against the Bulls, and Derrick Rose had this one move, and he showed glimpses of his old self.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, yo, this man got some of the sickest body control that I have ever seen.
Right.
Like, his handle and the way that he's able to maneuver and, like, in the air is, like,
absolutely
crazy. You think he ever going to return to the player that he was?
Oh, man. I think he can still compete at a high level. But as far as getting back to his 2010-11 MVP season, I don't think it's going to happen. And that hurts my heart to say, because I love Derrick. I've, you know, watching him since high school.
Yeah.
And he was just on another level. It was ridiculous.
Really?
But I don't it's sad because, you know, everybody says he might be the greatest what if player.
Yeah.
And no, as a competitor, you know, as an NBA star, and you know, any sport, nobody wants to be the greatest what if player. You know, so it's sad, but he still can compete. He's still a great player, but he doesn't have the consistency anymore.
He disappears a lot in games,
and that's
something that we were not used to seeing from him.
Right.
But I mean, he's still putting up solid numbers. I think he's still putting up 15 and 5 this year, which is still serviceable on many teams.
Right.
So yeah, let's move along though. Okay, so going away from the Warriors and speaking on my man, my favorite player, the favorite player of my generation, and that is Mr. Kobe Bean Bryant.
Okay. Okay.
So obviously he's doing his farewell tour this year. He announced a couple months ago that this is his last stint.
Right.
I hate to see him go out like this. I think the Lakers are sitting at like 11-46 right now.
Yeah, it's been a rough season for the Lakers. It's been rough.
It's rough, right? But so my question is though, as we are looking and observing this farewell tour of Kobe, is Kobe Bryant, let's look at his body of work, is he the greatest player of our generation? I mean, if you look at a career, he's averaging 25 points for a career, 4 assists for a career, and 5 rebounds. And he shot 83% from the free throw line for his career, 33% from 3, 45% from field goals. I mean, those are solid numbers. Like, ESPN had an interesting all-time great list in which they listed Tim Duncan at 8, and they listed Shaquille O'Neal was also in the top 10, and Kobe Bryant was at 12, and LeBron was at 4. I take great exception to that. Kobe Bryant being on the outside of the top 10 is like crazy to me. For one, I don't think Tim Duncan is better than Kobe Bryant. Tim Duncan, one of the greatest power forwards, I get it, but I feel like Kobe Bryant is the greatest player of our generation. What's your take?
I'm a huge Kobe fan.
Okay.
I respect Kobe's game. I respect his competitiveness, his nature, everything. I definitely think he could be in the top 10. I mean, depending on who you ask, everybody give you a different top 10.
Right.
But I could see an argument for Kobe definitely being in the top 10.
Yeah.
I could see it. When you look at his career as a whole, he's definitely just surpassed, you know, any and all expectations. But about to say what you said about the Tim Duncan thing. Oh man, that's a tough question. Because Tim Duncan,
I don't think people talk about it enough.
I know, because Tim Duncan, you have to, you can't not respect Tim Duncan. You know, he's Tim Duncan.
Rings.
Exactly.
They both got 5 rings, though.
Right, right. But if I had to pick, if I had to start a team and pick Tim or Kobe, I'm gonna take Kobe.
Okay, cool.
We can agree. I'm gonna take Kobe.
Because if you look at it, like, if you really want to dissect both careers, like, I mean, I'm not trying to give Kobe any excuses or anything like that. He was a team. He had his roles in breaking up teams. But, like, Tim Duncan has been very fortunate. He has had a very fortunate career. He's played under Coach Popovich's full career. When he came in, he was mentored by David Robinson. And each time a player got old or they needed to re-up, it always was a new player that, you know, could come in and help, whether it was Ginobili or whether it was Tony Parker or whether it was drafting Kawhi Leonard or whether it was bringing in LaMarcus. Like, this guy has always had a solid team, whereas Kobe has played with, like, he hasn't always had a fortunate career. He's had, you know, rosters where Smush Parker was his starting point guard,
or right.
Kobe Brown was his starting center,
right.
Or, you know, look at it now. Like, so he's definitely has had to go through some turmoil with teams. And for him to still, you know, 18 times make the All-Star team, you know, like, and I think what puts him in the top 10 for me is, like, when it comes to clutchness, that man is a cold-blooded killer.
Right.
So I'll give a nod to him over Tim Duncan off that alone. And I'm a perimeter girl. Like, players on the perimeter, I got more love for them than the post.
Right.
Wrong, the post is important.
Right.
But it's all about them wings.
Kobe has ice in his veins.
Like, he seriously wants to kill you. He would tell you, I'm going to kill you, right?
Right. He's an assassin on the court.
Right.
And you have to respect it.
Right.
You have to respect it.
Yeah.
Did you hear that in his farewell tour when the Lakers played the Cavs, I think it was about a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the what if trade, if they would have traded Kobe for LeBron. I was thinking about that. I was like, man, that would have been crazy.
That would have been crazy. Or what even if, like, say for instance, that year that the Lakers had played the Celtics, I think it was 2009 and 2010, or they had played the Magic, and then they played the Celtics in the finals. What if the Cavs had finished business in the playoffs and Kobe would have met LeBron in the finals? Like, that would have been epic, right?
That would probably went down as one of the best finals matchups. Absolutely.
And see, that goes to, you know, LeBron not getting it done. Not getting it done.
I know. Everybody joked about him. They said LeBron don't have a fourth quarter.
That's what makes players great for me. It's like,
yeah, you got to be able to finish. At the end of the game, clutch. when everybody knows who the ball is going to, you still got to deliver.
Exactly.
You know.
And 9 out of 10, I'm trusting Kobe.
Oh, absolutely. I think as LeBron's career has progressed, I think now he's developing more clutchness. Uh-huh. But I think early on in his career, he was still a little fearful,
yeah,
you know, about taking that final shot. And that's not to take any respect away from his game, mm-hmm, but when you think about the elite competitors, they all finish. You got to be able to finish games. True. You know, big time players make big time plays.
I agree.
And absolutely, when it comes down to it, you got to make the play. You know, even if LeBron misses that last shot, you still can live with the ball being in his hands.
Right.
You know, so that's just something that Kobe has always had, I think. It's just that clutchness. Kobe always wants the ball, and you know he wants the ball.
Exactly.
You know, if you look
you
at...
You know he want to shoot the ball.
Right, right. If you look at old highlights in a huddle, you see Kobe drawing up plays. Because, yeah, you know, he's a thinker.
Right.
You know, Kobe's not just a street ball player. He's a thinker. You know, so he knows the game. He knows, you know, what to do, when to do it. Mm-hmm. He knows how to put you in the right positions, and he's just that. He's just on another level, you know. And he's definitely going to the Hall of Fame, obviously. Oh, yeah, sure. Obviously,
I feel like he's one of the. I mean, I put him right behind Jordan as far as like shooting guards, mm-hmm, to ever play.
Absolutely,
I got him. Well, Jordan first. As far as shooting guards, I got Jordan, then Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put D Wade third.
Okay.
Flash days. D Wade, my knee hurt every day.
Right. I love D Wade. I'm a huge D Wade fan.
Yeah, D Wade was the man. I've been following him since Marquette.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely.
Oh yeah. Chicago kid. So you definitely know all about him.
Yep.
So getting back to this, you brought up LeBron, which I'm happy you brought up, because I, mm-hmm, definitely want to bring him in comparison to Kobe.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously we know the glaring thing on Kobe's resume is, you know, he got that one MVP, 20-year career, one MVP. Now, me, I'm not trying to be biased because I am a Kobe fan, but I feel like, honestly, like he got shortchanged. He definitely should have more than one MVP. I think Steve Nash got about two of his. But, you know, the whole rape case, and, you know, so I think it's a lot more politics as to why Kobe got robbed. I don't understand how you could average 35 points a season, and then that season you still not get MVP, but yeah, that's a whole other story.
Right.
What brings me to my question is LeBron James' body of work. Obviously, he got more MVPs, whatever. Mm-hmm. Kobe got more rings, but whatever. Is LeBron's body of work already, has it already surpassed Kobe Bryant? So we're talking about LeBron's 13 years in the books compared to Kobe's 20 years in the books. Has LeBron's body of work already surpassed what Kobe has?
LeBron has definitely, he's definitely achieved some milestones. Mm-hmm. I think he was, I think he's the youngest player to get 20,000 points, is it right?
Yeah.
I think.
LeBron?
Yeah.
Or Kobe?
I think LeBron was the youngest to get 20,000 points.
Yeah.
But when you look at the career as a whole, I mean, I still got to take Kobe.
Yeah, I mean, and then too, I feel like it is a tarnish to LeBron's legacy. I mean, don't get me wrong, the kid has gone to the finals 5 straight years. That's definitely
you got to commend it, right?
Yeah, but like he 2-4. So what point does it mean to get there and you not finishing? Now I get it. Okay, his first go round against the Spurs. I don't know how he even got that team to the finals. So
right, that's right.
But everything else, even last year, like yeah, two players were hurt with Kevin Love and Kyrie. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like they were up for a minute, 2-1.
LeBron, even though they lost, LeBron had a great series though.
He did.
He had a great. He really played his butt off that series. I gotta give it to him, but. He just, at the end of the day, it just came down to the Warriors just were deeper. They had a deeper team, deeper bench. So I guess you could blame the Cavs' injuries.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at the end of the day, you were in the finals. You still got to compete. Right. Regardless of who you got on the floor with you, you still got to compete.
So, in their prime, or you got the first pick in the draft. They both same age, 18. Kobe, 18. LeBron, 18. They both on the board. You number one pick.
Oh, man.
Who you number one draft pick? You the general manager.
Man. Wow, who am I building my team around? I still go with Kobe.
Uh-huh.
I think, man,
Actually, yeah, I'm gonna stay with Kobe. I'm not gonna change it. I'm gonna stay with Kobe. I'm gonna stay with my word. I think you definitely can build a team around Kobe, because Kobe's also a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, he's hard on you, but he's definitely a teacher. And I think playing with Kobe, you have no choice but to learn and get better. You know, so I think Kobe's definitely a good man to have on your team, a good leader. And he leads by example, obviously, and he's wise. Yeah. He has that basketball knowledge, that IQ. And so when you're building a team around someone, you want to have a player that definitely has the IQ and is going to actually be able to lead that team and not diminish that team by, you know, selfish, you know, accolades and whatnot. Yeah. And so that's why I got to go with Kobe.
He definitely is a basketball mind, but which that also brings up the fact that a lot of people say that, you know, they don't want to play with him because he is so much about winning. If you think about the Dwight Howard thing, if you ask me, Dwight Howard is soft, so that's kind of a bad example.
I agree. Dwight Howard is soft, in my opinion.
A lot of people seem to want to play with the more, you know, jovial and fun, easygoing LeBron, because, like, LeBron, I feel like LeBron hurts the game, you know, a little bit, because, like, the whole everybody got a handshake and everybody, you show love and, oh, let me go hug my competitors right after I lose to them. Like, he made the game a lot more friendly, buddy buddy, which I don't really like. That's why I like Russell Westbrook so much, because he reminds me of Kobe, and that I just want to kill you. Like, let's get it.
I love Russell Westbrook. Yeah, he's the man.
Like you, I'm definitely taking Kobe, too. I don't feel like LeBron's body of work has surpassed Kobe. Don't get me wrong. LeBron is a great player. He's a freak of nature. We're talking 6'8", 260, like a point guard.
Right.
So he's definitely is on his own level. But certain areas he lacked compares to Kobe. I feel like LeBron's a better passer. Probably a better IQ, but Kobe is lethal as far as killer and as far as, like,
absolutely
better shot, better
absolutely
free throw percentage, all of that. So I think that's little stuff like that you need to take into consideration. So me as a GM, I'm Kobe Bryant all day long.
Absolutely.
Question.
Absolutely.
All day long. All right, so that's good stuff. Oh, look who just came in. My main man, my host, James. What's up, James? What's going on, brother? Happy to hear you. Just recorded all, man, you just missed it. So we were just talking about Kobe Bryant's career in review. So we were talking about, has LeBron James' body of work already surpassed Kobe's body of work? You want to get in and do a little take on that? What's your take on that? Is Kobe, you a Kobe guy or are you a LeBron guy? I think I know what you're going to say. I think you're a Kobe guy.
I mean, I'm definitely a Kobe guy. It's hard for people to kind of project where LeBron's career trajectory is going to end.
Right.
And you can't argue with the 20 years, yeah, 5 championships.
Let's go.
Scoring title. Three All-Star MVP.
Come on.
I mean, the body of work speaks for itself. So if LeBron can finish off on a high note, I might add.
Yeah, because he is 2-4 right now, so he got a lot of turning around to do. He's 2-4 in the finals right now.
And I mean 2-4, and he's on an All-Star team. Yeah. Like, let's be frank about this. He won with one of the greatest combinations of talent.
Yeah.
Unofficially assembled in NBA history.
That's a good point, because Kobe never chased. Kobe, you know, living and dying as a Laker, whereas,
right,
you know, LeBron wanted to go chasing. You know, that's a whole other thing. With the whole LeBron leaving Cleveland thing, I as a fan, I was mad because I felt like, dude, you Beyonce, and you saying, like, I don't want to be Beyonce, I want to be Kelly and go help another man around this team. Like, you know, let's go be Destiny's Child and let's go be, like, I mean, come on. I felt like he killed his legacy going to chase a ring. I felt like in your 7th year, he gave 7 years to the Cavs. Like, he was still in his prime. Why are you going to go chase rings? Like, talent can come to you. But that's a whole other story. But getting back to the topic at hand, I definitely give a nod to Kobe Bryant. I feel like he's just a cold-blooded assassin. I'm always going to side with the assassin and the clutchness. And Kobe does it for me. LeBron leaves me hanging. And I'm a Cleveland person, and I'm saying that.
Well, I mean, that's big. That says a lot.
But, yeah, all right. So let's wrap up this. You know, I can talk basketball all day long, but we're going to wrap up this segment. And right now, let's go into some fresh juice. Fresh juice is where we play a song from a new artist. This artist can be from the DMV area, or this artist can be from anywhere. We will give this artist a social, let you guys know about his social media and where you can find this artist. And this week's artist, the first artist off this segment, is a guy from Cleveland. His name is Kwaku, straight from Cleveland. And this kid is really hot. I know he was doing his thing out in New York for a while. I think he's back in Cleveland right now. And this is a freestyle called Stop That. It's off his new mixtape that drops this month. You can find it on Bandcamp and Reverb Nation. You can also find him on Instagram at Kwaku. That's at Kwawcoo. Make sure you guys check it out. Let us know if you think it's hot or you think it's not. All right, so let's go into that. And after that, we would go into our last segment. So here's Kwaku. Stop That.
Stop That. Stop That. All that weak shit, stop that. All that fuck shit, stop that. All you greedy ass bitches need to stop that. All you hate ass niggas need to stop that. All you motherfuckers bitches need to stop that. All you crooked police need to stop that. Niggas told me spit it, so fuck it, nigga, I spit it. My homies told me spit it, so fuck it, nigga, I spit it. A cold one singing in my head, mini ripping. A cold one sitting in my hand, man, I'm living. When I hit the bar, go hard and stay tipping. My homie hit the car, Iron Man, Kyle Ripken. Niggas got the heat like Shaq in 06. Presidential suite, just call me Dick Nixon. Presidential freaks, man, she something like Lewinsky. Rolling through the hood, man, I'm sliding and I'm slipping. Riding with the loud, gotta dodge all the pussy. Need a few racks and some trees trying to book me. Cool like the wind in the summer, yeah, you feel me? Took a break from drinking, I was dogging my kidneys. Mama Ben told me, boy, you need to stop drinking. Glass of cognac while I'm whipping in the Lincoln. Moved out to NYC, that shit was magic. Now I'm back to CLE, nigga, I'm at it. Trying to live life above average in a city where the women love average and the niggas keep it static. Easy getting knocked, man, the boys are straight. Easy get boxed, man, he's hating niggas. Easy come, easy go, roll with the baddie. Love all the positive, God work magic. Lucifer alive in the city where we ride. Niggas keep the semis cause they tryna stay alive. Remember all the times as a child with my mom. Wintertime grinding us some tear in a Dodge. Street niggas came to the crib, burnt the garage. I think they was mad, man, my cousin's living large. Pops did a bid, man, he wouldn't drop a dime. It was what it was, man, that was love your times. So with that in mind, that's the reason that I grind. I'm tryna live a lot, fuck slave until I die. Call me George Jeff, I want my piece of the pie. Cold brown skin like Valona in a prime. Ice cold smooth, marble floors in my spot. Audi R8, 6 gear, then I'm at, man.
Smoke that weed, nigga, roll them blunts, nigga. Smoke that weed, nigga, roll them blunts, nigga. Smoke that shit, nigga. Don't let them pig niggas lock you up, baby. And like the man say, life is love, baby. So just remember that life is love, baby. Don't let them hood niggas pop you up, baby. Don't let them pig niggas lock you up, baby. And like the man say, life is love, baby. So just remember that life is love, baby. Don't let them hood niggas pop you up, baby. Don't let them pig niggas lock you up, baby. And like the man say, life is love, baby. So just remember that life is love, baby. Don't let them hood niggas pop you up, baby. Don't let them pig niggas lock you up, baby. And like the man say, life is love, baby. So just remember that. Life is love, baby.
You are now listening to the Black Juice Podcast on GlassHouseRadio.com, part of the Harvard University Radio Network. I'm your host, the one and only Tate Jordan. Make sure you follow the Juice on Twitter and IG at @black_juice. Don't be scared to sip the juice. All right, kings and queens, welcome back. We just wrapped up talking about Kobe's place in history and the Golden State Warriors' domination in the NBA. Earlier, we discussed race and entertainment, specifically the Cam Newton situation and the lack of color at this year's Oscar Awards. Now we'll be going into our final topic, and that is the Beyonce and Kendrick Lamar's controversial performances just a few weeks ago. Beyonce's performance took place during this year's Super Bowl 50 halftime show, and Kendrick's performance, his controversial performance, took place at this year's Grammys Awards. And luckily, I got my main man, my host, in right now. Let me introduce you to James. James is a student at Howard University School of Law. Definitely know his stuff. Happy to have him. You know, Black Juice Podcast. Say what's up, James.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. We're about to start a movement here. I'm glad to be here with my homie, Tate Jordan.
Hey, sip the juice, sip the juice.
We sipping this juice, man. I'm telling you, this is the forefront of promoting social justice with the culture and every facet of everything. So, I'm just happy to be here.
Definitely happy to have you on board, man. And I definitely know our listeners can get definitely something from your perspective for sure. So getting into blacks pushing the envelope with art. So obviously, you know, Kendrick Lamar is a controversial artist, you know, definitely one that's for the consciousness and pushing the envelope. And as far as social commentary, he's definitely one at the forefront. So a lot of people were, I wasn't surprised, but a lot of people were blown away by his Grammy performance. What was your take on that as far as Kendrick Lamar's performance? We're going to get into Beyonce later, but just your overall analysis on, is this the way it happened? Like, you know, Drake would say back to back, so we gonna say back to back. So the way it happened, you guys, Beyonce come out the gate with the Formation, and then, you know, the tribute to the Black Panther Party 1 week. The exact following week, you got Kendrick Lamar coming out with, you know, Chains and Breaking Loose, talking about we gonna be all right, and this is in front of millions of people to see. So this is entertainers, Black entertainers, using their platform. What's your take on that? What does it mean for us? Do Black people need to get information and we need to, like, be using our platform and our voice? Or is it just like, okay, you know, cool?
I mean, it was refreshing, you know? It's kind of been a void left by our leaders in recent, I want to say the last 20 years, as far as stepping up and taking the challenge of addressing social issues. So this is exactly what we needed. Mm-hmm. Not only, you know, are they the biggest artists on the planet?
Mm-hmm.
Two of the biggest artists on the planet. Let's get that right. The Beehive is strong.
The Beehive.
Kendrick Lamar coming off his hot streak at the Grammys. I mean, there aren't too many people that have the attention of mainstream media as well as the masses right now. So I thought that them putting forth those powerful images is exactly what we need mainstream America to see. I mean, because these artists, they could sit back and hide behind the fame, the money, the accolades.
Which they usually do.
They usually do.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that they're accepted and say, you know, I'm different. But Kendrick's performance in particular, he came out with the Chains, like, with his brothers, you know.
Right.
Just adding emphasis to that whole notion that I'm one of you, we're here together.
Right.
And the way America sees you is the way America sees me, and I thought that was a powerful image.
So was in terms of Kendrick's performance, was it his outcry and him having a conversation with his people, or more of a wake-up call to America as a whole, even white America included?
I mean, I thought his performance was meant to both re-solidify his connection with the Black community as well, because you know, with some questions that he went pop, or he did something different that was not traditional hip-hop with this last album, even though it's a creative masterpiece. That was, people were saying that in the background.
Right, right.
But I think that the more powerful image was throwing in the face of white America, saying that, you know, y'all love me, you adore me, but I am of these people. These are my people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't love me and divorce me from the affliction of mass incarceration that's happening to our people.
Right.
So I thought that, you know, that was great to just close that gap between superstars and him being an African-American.
Yeah, for sure. Now, a lot of people, you know, even Twitter and social media was going crazy during the performance. A lot of people, you know, gave him praise, but as you know, Black people would do, we still shoot people down for their efforts. So a lot of Black people were saying that, oh, he took out the popo line, though. Do you think that kind of, like, took away from the performance? Because it was an overstep. Like, he didn't overstep and not say the, you know, in that All Right song, he say an important line is, and we hate popo, want to shoot us dead in the streets for show. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak, and my gun might blow. So him deleting that line, I don't know his reasoning, but I can understand, like, you know, that can create a whole bunch of backlash, like, oh, he's a cop killer, and oh, blah, 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 anti-police. Do you think that him taking that out, that distorts and dilutes his performance, or are you cool with him taking it out?
Oh, I mean, I think it was a smart move taking it out, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that when certain controversial language gets brought into the discussion, they want to use that type of language to discount the entire message.
Right.
What he's trying to do. I thought that we hate popo, even though it might be a sentiment that a lot of us share, would have definitely overtook his entire performance and the message he was trying to convey.
I agree. So That's good stuff. Getting back to Beyonce, though, and the formation, the whole Super Bowl performance, you know, a lot of us, I feel like people I've talked to are just seeing stuff online. A lot of us didn't even realize what Beyonce was doing and that her dancers were doing a tribute to the Black Panther Party until we didn't realize until we didn't start seeing something. So were you surprised and taken off guard by the media uplash? I mean, you had Mayor Giuliani saying that, oh, boycott Beyonce, she's anti-police. You had police officers and sergeants and commissioners and governors and politicians backlashing and people talking about they going to, you know, boycott her music. Were you surprised at this backlash?
I mean, I wasn't surprised. I was a little disheartened by it. But, you know, any strength, any show of strength by, you know, people kind of breeze this kind of discourse and this type of conversation. I mean, the imagery was powerful, but I didn't think it was anything particularly derogatory towards police. If anything, it was more a testament to Black survival, Black power, Black empowerment.
Black pride. Like, why when we're prideful for our culture? And, you know, she said it on the song, like, you know, she loved her husband's big Negro nose. Like, and it's like, it armed Black pride loudly makes the masses uncomfortable. And it's like, you know, what is white America? What is mainstream America? What is the fear? What is the uncomfortable? Like, even with the Cam Newton thing, like, his whole dabbing on the football field makes them so uncomfortable. Like, why can't we, why Black people just can't live?
We can't live. Let us live.
We can't live.
Can I live?
I mean, no, I definitely had the same sentiment as you. I mean, I would love to have someone who can weigh in on why Black pride equals anti-white all the time. And I mean, this is the narrative that they've been running since the Panthers started.
Right.
You know, 40, 50 years ago. Since
Black Panther Party, the terrorist group, and they served, all they did was serve hot breakfast.
Serving free lunch. They before the Panthers, there was no free lunch system for students in America.
Yeah, right? It's crazy, man. It's definitely crazy. So do you think this is starting a new trend with our stars and that they are going to use their platform for good?
I mean, just like with anything, you have people who are conscious and you have people that are quiet and willing to take the money. I think that the success of these two records and these two movements definitely show artists that you don't have to compromise your integrity in order to sell music or to be successful. So I think that, you know, some artists who are currently not making that type of music might be inspired to do so, as well as open the lane for new artists to come in and push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Good stuff. All right, so we're gonna wrap up that. So we're gonna get off into what didn't you know. So what didn't you know is the part of the show when we give you, our listeners, a really good Black history fact, a little known fact that you guys should know. It can be Black history or world history. So speaking of, we talked about Grammys. So this year, Kendrick Lamar took home 4 Grammys for out of being nominated 11 times. He didn't win for Album of the Year or Song of the Year. Those are generally not categories that, you know, hip-hop artists win in, unfortunately. In fact, there has only been 2 hip-hop acts that has ever won for Best Song, and that was Outkast and Lauryn Hill back in the day. So, yeah, you know, like J. Cole said, you know, white people sold the culture and the sound. We don't even win nothing. But anyway, that's a whole other story. So, yeah, that's it for today's show, Kings and Queens. And as always, thank you for sipping the juice this week. I hope you enjoyed. Make sure you meet us back here at the same time next week for another segment. And be sure to tell all your friends to sip the juice as well. Next week's show will be another epic listening session, so you don't want to miss it. Stay up to date with us at www.theblackjuice.com. And also on Facebook, you can find us, like our page at theblackjuice.com on Facebook. And on Twitter and IG, be sure to follow us as @@theblack_juice. That's @@theblack_juice. Stay positive and stay thirsty. And remember, don't be scared to sip the black juice. You are now listening to the Black Juice Podcast on GlassHouseRadio.com.
The seed has been planted. The root gives us foundation. Its branches help us reach the people. Its leaves show our progress and growth. Its fruits represent incidents in our community, and the juice is the truth within the fruit. Each fruit is freshly squeezed for us by us. Don't be afraid to sip the juice. The truth shall set you free. TheBlackJuice.com.